Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight. I'm your host, Alexis, and I'm joined here by the other Alexis. This one would be Moreno. We're here, and we're going to be talking about the things that have happened in the world of movies. And, you know, much of what we're discussing tonight is going to feel like a continuation of my conversation with David last week. Of course, a big film came out, which was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We're going to get into that one. And then, of course, all the other, you know, big things happening in the world of movies, which includes the writer's strike and, of course, the ever-changing landscape that we call streaming. And plus some other things here and there that we can get into. That's going to be our show today on Red Spotlight number 445. Alexis, how are you doing? Thank you for being here. I know it probably is a bit tiring to be here Thursday night at 8:24 p.m. with the ancient, you know, fossils that we are. I'm surprised we can even have the energy to do it. And I'm not even being facetious, because 8 o'clock was I was laughing, but I understood, because Kyle was supposed to be here on this podcast. I invited him to be on this podcast, and I told him 8 p.m. and he's like, that's too late. And I'm like,
to be honest, I thought so too. That's why I had said 7, but then I was like, I don't have to wake up early tomorrow, so it's fine.
Okay, as long as we have that. I mean, and I understand maybe that's why you did 7. That's why I offered 4 o'clock. I could have been here at 4 o'clock. Although,
I was happy I was.
Well, okay, I get off at like a 3, but you know, when it gets to be 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, I start to like lose consciousness. Okay.
Like I get, you know? I went shopping because I have a quinceañera this weekend. I was falling asleep in the store.
Oh my god!
Like, I was walking around yawning and like I don't want to be here right now, but I have to find something.
I feel like this is like a watershed moment, right? This is the moment we've officially crossed into being old people. Because how does this happen? It just did. You go to a mall and you're falling asleep, and then Kyle says at 8 o'clock is too late. I mean, there were times where I think even though we largely avoided doing so any other point, but I do think one time or another we would start recordings at 10 o'clock.
Well, I know. I mean, granted, this is like lockdown time, but like we would start at 10. We did the Star Wars thing at 10.
Oh yeah,
because that's when the episode would come out.
Yeah, the Clone Wars stuff, right? Yeah, of course. I mean,
there you was... guys would do movie after going to go watch a movie. You would record yourselves in the car, and then you would go home and still make a podcast. Can't be me.
Isn't that... No, now it's like, it's not even a consideration. And it's not so much like... You mentioned After Dark. We haven't done that in years. And it's not so much that, like, we made an executive decision. Oh, we're not going to do this anymore. It was more like a...
I'm tired. Eh. Let's go home.
I mean, remember, I'm sure you were aware of this, but when, you know, back in 2015 when The Force Awakens came out, BNC was still a thing. And we would do the videos, Julio and I, and I believe Kyle, and Peter. Oh, yeah, Peter. Sorry, I forget about Peter's existence these days. Because of how non-existent he is. We went to the movies... Obviously, hours in advance, because there was a line. Back in those days, here, where we live, they still didn't have reserved seating. So you bought your tickets, but you had to basically wait in line and see if you can get a good seat. We were there hours in advance. We watched the movie. Then we recorded an After Dark. Then we drove home and recorded a video review.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I went to bed that night until like 3 or 4 in the morning.
Well, I remember for, oh my god, that is so late.
Right?
For BVS, we did the movie, we did the video, and the next morning we did the podcast at the butt crack of dawn. That was the worst.
No. Okay. We did, okay. We did BVS. We did an After Dark. You were in it?
Yes.
You were in that video?
I'm pretty sure I was.
I think you're remembering. I don't think you were in the After Dark. You were in the Suicide Squad one, but you were not in the BVS After Dark. What you were in was the BVS Barely News Crew review.
Yeah.
So this is what happened. Thursday night, we watched the movie BVS, then we did the After Dark. Then the very next morning, very fucking early morning.
Yeah.
Like, doing this now would destroy me. But let's be honest, like, it wasn't that, I mean, we weren't having fun at that point because it was, like, so late and so early. But the next day, we did two things. We did a condensed, video review. And then we did the long form podcast. Yes. Now it's coming back to you now, right? The long form podcast review. And then for the most I can remember out of it. I mean, I remember a lot of that conversation and how I remember even the feels. But the most I can remember was that, you know, Peter went on a 30-minute. This is not my Batman rant, which was hilarious. Yeah. In a way, we could say those were the days, but like. Crap, how did we do that? Clearly, we had no lives.
The time. Yeah, literally, we had the time.
We had no lives, we had no jobs, we had no responsibilities. I think that's kind of the answer, right? That's quite We had the time to just do that. But now, it's a struggle to even do a podcast. It's a struggle to even go to the movies. Like, I'll be honest, last week for Guardians 3... That was the first time in a long time I had gone to the movies on a Thursday night. And part of me was like, because I, since working regularly, I prefer doing Friday night or Friday even.
Yeah.
Even Friday afternoon.
Yeah. That's way the weekend starts. That's how I feel too. Because like I can maybe do beginning of the week when I have a little bit more energy, but then once it gets to the end of the week, I'm like, oh my god.
Yes.
And then we did two movies that week. We did Return of the Jedi on Tuesday and then Guardians on Thursday,
which, I mean, great selection of movies.
It was
that wasn't, I think, a regret. It was just like, but I'm sure it did, you know, create a bit of pause in you, like, do I really have the energy to do that? Do I really have the time to do that? You know, it's a lot more to think about.
Like, that time that we watched a bunch of movies, I had to, like, mentally prepare myself to be like, okay.
Yeah. No, I feel you completely. And I did feel... Sitting in the theater on Thursday, it was like, I mean, I felt good. I felt, you know, it wasn't an over. On Thursdays, that Thursday, I guess I was pretty good. Either that or I was just really fucking excited.
Yeah,
so it kind of like, it balanced out.
I think I was, because when we watched Return of the Jedi, it felt eternal. That movie felt so long. Like, I got out and I wasn't, like, sleepy or anything, but, like, I got out and I was like, that movie felt like the longest movie of my life.
Oh, my God.
And, like, it was fun because, like, the crowd was a little bit, like, interacting with the movie and stuff.
Sure, right.
But, oh, my God, I was dying.
And, yeah. So, that's kind of what I was afraid Guardians would turn into, no matter how excited I was for it. But, thankfully... that wasn't the case, because usually Thursdays, like, hey, today it's a Thursday. By Thursdays, I'm pretty worn out. You see, there's the case in point. By Thursdays, I'm pretty fucking worn out. Like, even walking out of work today, was talking with some of my friends at work, and like she was describing her how she feels, and I'm like, I'm the exact same way. I feel the exact same things. I've had the exact same day. I've had the exact same week. I talked to like 3 or 4 people today. We all woke up feeling the same thing, which was we woke up. It was like 6:30. I mean, for me, I woke up and we go like, fuck, I have to go to work right now.
Yeah.
Like that's, and usually that's not the case. But this week was a struggle. By the way, this week was state testing.
Oof.
It's miserable. It is miserable. And it's miserable. And you know what? All I want to do, I'm sorry. I'm so over all the things that are going on there. I'm even over this podcast. I just want to go and watch Guardians again. That's all I've been wanting to do the entire week, honestly. And yeah, it's been a thing. So anyway, Kyle was supposed to be here. He's probably in bed right now. Honestly, so that's why, you know, he's not here.
That's too late.
Yeah, I know. By the way, I'm gonna put this part in the podcast. I don't know if he's gonna send a like little review of the movie, and then I'll insert it in. So at some point in the podcast, you might hear that, and if you don't, well, he didn't get to it. And then Peter was also invited to be here, but again, he no longer exists. So it's kind of like, well, he no longer exists to do much of anything. It was a miracle in and of itself that he joined us on Thursday, which I pointed this out to David on the last podcast that this past Thursday to do Guardians 3, that was the first one – the first movie that I can think of where all of us went to go see it, like preview night, opening night.
Dang.
But I mean, it's the freaking Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. I mean, how can you not show up for this? Apparently a lot of people didn't show up.
Oh my God.
But I mean, we showed up because we actually like cared about obviously these characters, this series of movies, in spite of our very long list of frustrations with Kevin Feige and the MCU. In spite of all that, we knew James Gunn was going to be allowed to deliver something truly special. Because he's been, he got the chance to do it twice before. Why not? And of course, the trailers looked amazing. So, yeah. Anyway, we're all so freaking tired at this point. So, just so you know, that's the kind of podcast it's going to be in case, and Peter rarely has time these days to do much of anything. It was even a miracle in and of itself that he was able to appear on the top 10 show recently.
I know.
Now, I was going to ask you this question. I know that you weren't here. You were supposed to be on the podcast last time, but apparently you had a migraine, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It didn't go away till like, the next day. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, it was so bad.
Yeah, because you were supposed to be on last week's show, but at the last minute you pulled out because, you really can't argue with a migraine. It fucking kills your whole mood.
Yeah, it really does. And then I get them like, bad. Like, I start throwing up and stuff.
That is awful. That is genuinely awful. Fuck. Okay. Yeah, so you were supposed to be on last week's show. Anywho. The top 10 2022 happened. I heard it took me a couple of weeks to hear it back. The whole thing from beginning to end, because it is 3.5 hours, you know? It's a long fucking show. I don't even know. Did you hear it?
Yes.
Okay. It's a long thing to get through. And in acknowledging that it is really long, here's something that may make it even longer. So I'm thinking, I said this to David last time, it would be nice, instead of me just reading off the movie that he picked, if he were there to actually like say what he thought and why he picked that movie at that place. You know, just ideally. But the problem is, if we do that, You take an already 3.5 hour experience and you turn it into what? 4.5 hours?
Mm-hmm. I think you should maybe do a two-parter.
I threw it out there. It didn't seem to get...
The ones that are not in the top 10. Uh-huh. And then the top 10. And then that way, it's like, ooh, intrigue. What's going to be on there?
That is a very good suggestion. We should probably do that next time. We can do like a show setting up like, you know, the usual disappointments and honorable mentions. And then getting into the top 10. But I don't know. Did you find... let me ask you. How did you like the show? Did you... and the lists themselves?
I mean, it was all kind of the same. The only, like...
Yeah.
Out there one was David's Dragon Ball movie. Mm-hmm. But everybody's was pretty much the same. Which yeah. isn't a bad thing. Like, it was, mm-hmm. you know, understandable.
Why this was something so- that Peter had called out. I think he felt that this is how it was going to go months ago, which is, it was one of those years where, like, it's pretty undeniable which were the ones that were either at the top half mm-hmm. of, like, the best of the movies or the ones that all of us kind of liked. In a way, it really was almost all the same movies. I want to say David had some ones, though, that were more different, like Dragon Ball and Northmen. And retroactively, it didn't happen in the real recording, but retroactively, he replaced Banshees with Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. So, again, that, yeah, but I appreciate that because it brings more diversity in there. Let me actually look at the list right here. I think movies that... See, The Whale. David had The Whale and Kyle had The Whale. Okay. They were the ones to have it in their top 10. Peter was the only one to include Tar with Kate Blanchett in the top 10. It barely missed mine. Nobody else here saw it, so there's that. Puss in, okay. Yeah, again, it's a lot of the same movies. Like, okay. I'm going to name to you the films that was at least on two people's lists or more. Top Gun, Puss in Boots, Glass Onion, Nope, Everything Everywhere, Batman, Fablemans, Banshees, Avatar, Pinocchio. That's a lot of movies already. Mm-hmm. RRR. It's like, it's like all basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
The only exceptions include, I think Kyle's is the only one that included Prey, even though, like, for David, that was basically an honorable mention. Kyle was the only one that included Elvis. I was the only one to include Turning Red, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not happy about that, but... yeah, that's weird. That's really weird. That movie deserved a lot more. Yeah, okay, now I'm getting pissed off. And Peter was the only one to include Babylon. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. I want to say there was even, I'm trying to think. David include, yeah. The Batman, I think, was the one. The Batman and Everything Everywhere were the two that got on everybody's lists.
Yeah.
That movie, it was everywhere.
All at once.
Yeah. And Banshees would have been one, but anymore.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. That's funny. That's funny. So, yeah, I guess in that way it is kind of boring. But, I mean...
It wasn't boring. I mean, like, it was still interesting to see or to hear where you guys would place them.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people were mad over some of them. But
I mean, but that's kind of baked in, right? I feel like no matter what, someone's always going to be like pissed off. Like I was saying to David, like by the time we get to the top three, things have devolved to, to such a degree that like who's even hearing who anymore? Like we're just kind of like saying something. We're trying. Like I try to communicate. Like when I thought I was going well. The whole thing with me at the end, I was trying to articulate why I wanted to put, you know, Everything Everywhere at number one, Fifth Ones at number two initially, but I knew those two were going to be like, who, you know, hollering and like pushing back. So I usually just remove my earbud and just kind of like try and plow through it because those two are not going to let me have a word in edgewise, you know? And if I, the thing is, if I have my earbud in place and I hear what they're saying, it's going to like throw me off and then I can't finish my thought or my thoughts. So that whole thing happened and then I finish and then like Kyle wouldn't let it go. It's like, wait a minute, this is bullshit. And it's like, oh, fuck, well, okay. And then I ended up giving some time to think about it, which I did. And it was like, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Because if we look back in years, there were a lot of, if you look back at some of the lists in the previous years, I guess in retrospect, there are some questionable choices. Like how Kyle mentioned, putting Last Jedi below Logan, which, I mean, at the time we all knew. I mean, we, that was, yeah. Or even below Guardians. Like, and the thing is, I didn't even realize it at the time. But yeah, I guess Kyle did pick three Star Wars films, number one, 3 years in a row, 15, 16, and 17. That's funny. I didn't even realize it when he said it, but yeah, I guess that's true. Force Awakens, Rogue One, The Last Jedi. It's a Star Wars movie, number one, 3 years in a row. That's funny. And then I know that Peter was giving me crap about, like, bad faith crap, I would say, about, like, Parasite not being number one. I don't think he put Parasite number one either. I'm pretty sure he had something else there, but you know how he fucking is. That, but then he was on one at the end. Like I basically like gave like a long like tangent about like, okay, how much, you know, I was so indecisive, and about my decision and that the, and then he follows it up with, this one goes out to the haters and the losers. and then just starts like listing like Academy Award win and this and this and like, what? Okay. It wasn't that it was boring, because it obviously wasn't. There's always going to be some entertainment that goes into it. I mean, apparently, I didn't even realize how much it upset him that you and I put Eternals so high.
Oh, I know. They brought that up.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, and?
What about
Why didn't you? Yeah, what about Oh, man, that was funny. So, yeah. We're going to see if we can do that next year then. Have David on. I'm curious though, did you have a favorite movie of last year?
Batman.
Besides that one. I think that one was pretty much obvious.
Then, no.
I mean, I feel it was obvious. Well, if...
I like a lot of the movies, but Batman was just like...
Yeah, because it is an amazing movie. So, with all that being said, in speaking about favorite movies, a national tragedy is about to happen Memorial Weekend. And I'm referring to The Little Mermaid, 2023. That's because... Alexis, every clip, every image, even when people from the movie speak or give an interview or say something. I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's like cutting my life short by a few years or something. Because it's not enough that on principle, from a conceptual standpoint, the whole thing of this existing is so flawed and insulting on so many levels to so many people. It's not enough that you can't see anything. It looks like crap. The visual effects are embarrassing. All the underwater stuff looks so unbelievably fake with the actress not even knowing where to look. It's not enough that this comes off the back of so many other movies like this that were hollow and soulless. But then they started releasing clips. And I think to me, where it kind of got to a place of even more disgust for me was when they released the looks for Sebastian and Flounder.
Oh my God.
And I wanted to... I just wanted to scream. Because it's like, oh, okay. That's just completely horrifying and monstrous and soulless and completely not at all. Again, every image coming out of the movie, that this is not the vibrancy that I would want out of a story like this. And all the underwater stuff just like isn't working. They even released a clip this week, I believe, of Poor Unfortunate Souls with Melissa McCarthy in it. And I think I'll give her this. All things considered, she's not terrible, but you can't help but feel like his. The thing that irks me is that they're using the exact same fucking dialogue. They're using the exact same fucking dialogue. And in the middle of all this fucking writer's strike, you think to yourself, you know what? It's a really good thing this happens, and I really hope more people strike, because, like, how fucking they keep getting away with this? Like, think of the people who were working on that original film that you and I love so much. Again, I want to plug our audio commentary that we did in the pandemic. It was a great one. Go listen to it. This film changed the course of history for animation, for Disney, more than any of the other ones. But it's just so unbelievably disrespectful and insulting, and I honestly feel it should be illegal how they've been able to just lift, copy and paste the screenplay and the script from one movie to the other, and then and for one thing, they don't even try to do anything different, but the whole concept of that being allowed is just so disgusting to me, especially when they don't even pay the original people who worked on this movie anything. All of the money that this would make is not going to go to any of the people that did the actual work to make it, you know, the way that it is. And so, again, I look at that clip, and Melissa McCarthy is like, it comes across less like a performance and more like somebody who's trying to imitate what came before it to a T. And maybe every other line, again, it's the same lines, but every other line, they intentionally say it just a little bit different. That way it's not exactly 100% the same. But again, it's like you even saw – you didn't really have a comment on this, but I think it was in the last week or so they released a little bit of audio of Halle Bailey's version of Part of Your World, which amazing vocal ability. No one is denying that. I don't think anybody was even thinking that she wouldn't be great for – her to be cast in a role like Ariel, you have to have some pretty big chops. And then when the trailer came out, we got a little glimpse of the vocals, and then the recording came out of it. And she's a great vocalist, but again, just even, I think it was, she was singing part of the chorus there. And off the bat, so many issues that was like, you can't even do this right. You can't even, and the thing is like, it's not garbage. It's not like it's the worst thing ever, but it's like, it doesn't sound awful. However, when you keep in mind
Like, and I feel like you're trying to make it exactly the same, and it's just off-putting.
I think they're in some moments overall in the movie, a lot of the movie, they're trying to make it so much of the same, and it's off-putting. But what I mean in particular with the part of your world stuff, in my mind, and I think a lot of Disney fans' minds, is they have those clips from the recording sessions of Howard Ashman meticulously directing Jodie Benson over and over and over again for the, you know, enunciation of certain things and how much she would put into this note here or there. That man was nothing if not precise and particular with what he wanted. And part of your world is as much Howard Ashman's legacy than anything else was. Part of your world is the embodiment of who Howard Ashman was as an entity, as a human being, and what he put out there. And to hear this version and them just kind of like, this really sounded a little bit like a Broadway version, but it also sounded like a little, like if they did a pop version too, mm-hmm. like she was doing like a number of like unnecessary runs. And it felt like, okay, this is where we're going to try and do something just slightly different. And it's like, yeah, she sounds great, but it's like, it did come off like she was over singing and overemphasizing the wrong parts of the song, where every Disney fan knows that Jodie Benson's version of Part of Your World is the definitive version of that song for a reason. So that was already frustrating, right? Then come comments from either Halle Bailey herself or Rob Marshall about some kind of insensitivity that was around the Kiss the Girl song, or about how there that was this matter of consent.
It's so funny to me because I feel like if anything, I feel like, you know, you hear those issues of like the princesses, like, I mean, with this one, she left her family to be with a guy, Belle, Stockholm Syndrome, and all that stuff, right? But this is like the one scene that is like, oh, okay. Like, I feel like maybe like besides Aladdin, but this is like the first time that you get to see a prince actually talk and have some character, and like him turning back and not actually wanting to kiss her, or actually wanting to, but being like, maybe I shouldn't. Insane. And the fact that they took something like that and was like, oh, this doesn't
They twisted it.
Yeah.
They twisted like it and like, did something that wasn't ever there.
Yeah.
And like, I'm reading those comments and I'm like, do you even remember the movie? These are the people who are representing this version. Rob Marshall's the fucking director, and he's saying this crap. Like, oh, you know, we want to update it for modern times and, you know, consent. And it's like, that wasn't a fucking issue, bro. That wasn't there at all at the beginning. Or you watched the movie.
It was
a
good example of consent. And then it even like after that, when it's just like funny that they brought that up in that situation, unless they're not talking about that situation and they just kind of got twisted. Well,
but what do you mean that situation? Like, it's Kiss the Girl. They changed the lyric.
What I'm saying is, like, are they talking about like the whole thing? Because like in my view, the whole consent thing can be him not wanting to kiss Ariel because she doesn't know her, she can't talk, you know? And then literally right after that, Vanessa takes over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he can't control what he's doing. I'm wondering if maybe that has something to do with it. I'm literally giving him the benefit of the doubt, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just funny that that is like, if it is actually Kiss the Girl, it's just funny that that was the issue and not what happens afterwards. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you this question, Alexis. Do you like Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides?
I only like the first one.
Okay, you know he directed that, right?
Yes. I also know he directed Mary Poppins too.
And that one's better. That one's a lot better. But still, I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it is a lot better. However, we have eyes.
Into the Woods.
I forgot that existed. He directed that one.
Why do you think I was so like, oh god, when he came out saying that he was gonna do Mary Poppins 2? It turned out a lot better than I expected it, and I do actually really like that movie, but goddamn, he like completely does like a 180.
And then there were also some comments that Halle Bailey gave that were not received well in terms of, like, you know, her version of Ariel giving more quote unquote nuance to the character besides just wanting to go and kiss a boy, which I'm not going to lie, more than anything else, that's what pissed me off the most.
That's really frustrating because it just gives this. It feeds into the narrative that people have towards this movie already.
No, I mean, it's like that's the start of this new version of the story, almost instantaneously validating these talking points from the online sphere about the fact that Little Mermaid isn't that great of a film and Ariel is a terrible protagonist because she left her whole family and she was selfish and she wanted to kiss a boy. All those people you and I have been saying for years are full of shit and wrong and very clearly did not see the same film we did. But yet here is the star who here's the new Ariel basically saying to those people, yeah, you guys are right. And in this story, we're going to make it more than she just wants to kiss a boy. That was never in the... That wasn't just what... But you can't even talk. You can't even talk. So you have to understand that, like, we're talking about this film as if it's already, like, it hasn't opened yet, you know? But it's like, so much has already happened that I'm so unbelievably infuriated before this happens. And, you know, I haven't come to a final decision if I want to see this in theaters or not. I will say I'm very thankful that, one, the week that it comes out, I'm going to be out of the country. So that's going to help a lot. And two, the following month, I'm going to be traveling a lot. So fingers crossed I can, like, miss this and pretend it doesn't even exist. But, like, I don't know how you feel. I know I've been talking a lot about this project. I know a lot you've already shared in the frustrations that I have had, or at least some of them. But, like, even in the best of circumstances, I would have been against the film. You know, just how they make movies. But still, knowing how everything has, you know, turned out in the past, it is, I want to say the written reviews are going to drop the following week. Like, this coming week, they'll be released, because all we have to go off right now are social media reactions, which are not really reliable, because I want to say that all the social media reactions to all the previous live-action adaptations have been like, it's cute, it's fun, it's the same story you know, and vague, and not at all clear, and never really touches on, like, what the actual problems are. Then the actual written critic reviews drop, and it's like, this film is the worst thing ever. It is, you know, the Antichrist. It is an affront to humanity. Disney should be ashamed of themselves. Disney are, you know, the worst. So it's like, I don't know. I just know that when this trailer plays, I'm like disgusted. And there's also something else I want to touch on, which is the very ugly place people are taking this to. I want to say two very different, like polar opposites groups of people that they're taking this to an ugly place. We didn't address it. At least I didn't address it in this conversation because to me, the fact that Halle Bailey is a woman of color is not an issue for me. It's beside the point, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think
I think
she fits the part perfectly. Yeah, it's just the way that this movie looks, the things that we've seen not pertaining to her have not been good.
I feel like that's been made pretty clear, but I just feel like people who are listening, and I've seen some people go after others on Twitter, especially about like them misconstruing any kind of negative feedback on the movie as like, oh, you just don't like it because there's like a black person that's, you know what?
I even saw a comment, somebody saying like, it's going to be hard not to seem like a racist if you don't like this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not okay either.
Mm-hmm.
You can have opinions that don't have to pertain to that.
Yeah, but it's just like, I think that person was coming at it from the point of view that like, hey, I know I'm not going to like this movie, but me not liking this movie so passionately, people are going to think that I'm hating on Halle Bailey. And there are people that just cannot separate those two.
Yeah.
Even though you're being pretty clear, but they can't separate what you're actually trying to say. All because there are very real racists out there who are raging and hoping this film fails, not for any of the reasons that we just spoke to, not for any of the real problems with it, but because they cast a woman of color as, you know, Ariel.
Yeah.
And that is obviously horrible and disgusting if you feel that way. And I have to tell you, part of why I don't like the trailer coming up, and I got to be honest with you, Alexis, and I hope it doesn't get me in trouble saying this, because it's made me really uncomfortable when the trailer happens, because let's just say race relations, the place that I live, they're not very sensitive or PC about race issues. And the general makeup of the people who I watch movies with are not black.
Mm-hmm.
They're very homogenized with one particular race. When the trailer comes on, I always feel like people are talking over it. And then I hear like giggles and laughs and a lot of confusion. And then this most recent time, when the trailer finished, a lot of people were like confused, and maybe I'm just jumping to conclusions, and maybe it's too much of a previous experience I had mentioned before where I did overhear, you know, a family close by that was questioning why, no, they weren't questioning, they were just calling the mermaid ugly, very likely because she was black. And then other, you know, encounters I've had with people who were like, you know, just mad for, you know, that reason alone. I couldn't help but feel like, because there was an unusual amount of like giggling and laughing and talking over that trailer once it was finished, that I'm like, are they really having that much of a conniption over the fact that they have a black Ariel? And they most likely are.
Yeah.
And that's very upsetting and uncomfortable for me.
It is. It's, but, you know.
That isn't to say that I'm blaming Disney for casting a black person. No, of course not. Any woman of color should obviously be up for any role. You know, I feel like on this podcast, we've made no secret that's how we feel. It's just rather uncomfortable when it meets reality and there are people who just very clearly are not open to that idea.
Yeah. Or, like, when people, like, just casually are, like, I don't know. Yeah, I've heard it happen around me as well, and it just, I don't know, it just makes me think, like,
what exactly have you heard?
Like, they'll see it for the first time, and they'll be like, what the hell, she's black? Or, like, you know, just, like, like, I don't know, it's just crazy.
Anyway, I guess all of this was, I wanted to get to you. How are you feeling about it? The project overall, and what are your plans, and how do you think you're going to react?
I think that there's just a lot of things that are going to make me upset when I see it. But it's also, I don't know. I feel like it's also just like, I shouldn't be someone that you should go to if you want to see this movie, because
I love how you're just removing yourself from credibility. Yeah. It's like, I'm not the person to, why?
Because I look at a movie, I mean, from past experiences, I look at Alice in Wonderland, and then I look at maybe like Aladdin. I like Aladdin, obviously, but it's not like my favorite, it's not my go-to, it's not, you know, and I was fine with it. Like, it's not the best, obviously, I know, but like, it's fine to me. Whereas I see something like Alice in Wonderland, and it's like, don't even talk to me, like, get that away from me right now, you know what I mean? And so I feel like with this movie, like, this movie just is at that level of Alice in Wonderland, maybe even more, I don't know. I think because of how much, footage and recorded things are about how this movie was made, and which I, you know, it's another reason why I really like this movie, that I'm just, like, I know that I'm not gonna like it, but I also am aware that I'm not giving it a fair chance. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because of that, because it's so, like, big to me. So, yeah.
And I feel like maybe some people out there may think that I'm not giving it a fair chance either. No, and I never made any kind of, like, pretenses if I ever was. But I strongly feel that my reasons for not giving it a fair chance have a lot to do with the track record of the Disney live action unit. I think a lot of people don't pay enough attention to the track record of a particular filmmaker or a studio or films that are of this type. And if you look back, I hate The Lion King. I thought, you know.
And then I think, like, also after the stuff came out where they're not even giving the original, like, filmmakers their due credit or any type of compensation for these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that irks me so bad because, again, I am somebody that follows these people. I am somebody that looks at how they made the movie, who looks at them specifically, and the fact that they're, like, not being acknowledged, like, and then is especially for this movie, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Let alone them being characters that we literally have grown up with us, you know, or that were there with us when we grew up and we visited them at parks. Lion King 1994 is one of the best films ever made. Lion King 2019 is one of the worst films ever made. I'm being real here. Even in the best of circumstances, the best this could be is, like, harmless. If it ends up being like, oh, it's fine. Even that, it's like, but still, what is the point? What is the point in just making something that is like, eh, it's decent, or it's fine, or I didn't hate it, but, like,
And like, I was very excited for the movie in the beginning because of all the people that were going to be involved in it.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes. And all the cast and stuff. Like, I was excited for it to come out. Not maybe not excited, but I was like, oh, okay. Like, maybe, like, it'll be different than the rest. And it's just, like, the things that we've seen and the things that have come out have not been good at all, in my opinion. Because I know I've seen people be like, oh, my God, it looks so good. It's so pretty. I can't. I'm sorry, but...
I guess you have to ask those people, how many films do they see a year? No, that's just, I don't mean to gatekeep here. I don't mean to be, like, a condescending asshole, but okay, I'll do it. I'm just going to put it out there. If you really think that's pretty, tell me right now how many movies you saw last year. And were they all by Disney? Were they all blockbusters? Please. You've got no idea what something good looks like if that's what you think that is. Sorry. Not sorry.
Yeah. And I also think... Okay, because I'm somebody that grew up with the live-action Peter Pan movie, the 2003 one. And I feel like I have always, especially with these movies, have compared the live-action Disney movies to that one. Because that one today looks so much better than what we've gotten with all of the live-action movies.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So... it's just crazy to me that we're not getting at least like a quarter of that type of film.
No, but that was never the point. They're just copying the same movies with realistic live action looking animation. And that's the gimmick. I mean, we didn't even mention that somehow they added, what was it? 40 to 50 minutes of like runtime to the story. Like this Little Mermaid movie is going to be like an hour longer.
Why?
You see that what I'm saying? But that's the same. That's look, Peter, if he ever listens to this, he'll be screaming at you. What do you mean? Why? It's what he says all the time. This is what they do. They just stretch it out to make it seem...
If you're not going to make it like the original story, why are you going to add more?
No, but this is... Alexis, this is what they think. They think them, like, making a scene longer is like, oh, this will be new. This will be different. Do you remember how Lion King 2019 dealt with it? They literally had nature transitions to go from one scene to the other, one of which involved a dung beetle rolling a ball of shit. And someone thought, this is a nice way to stretch out the story just a little bit longer, all to kind of fool you into thinking, it's not the same story. We've got some things that are different. Yeah, at least I remember seeing it was at least 40 to 50 minutes more. And you know what I did find out, though? They did cut two songs. They did cut out two songs from the original film. I think they added in one or two, but then they did replace two songs. Did you want to know which ones they were?
Oh, God. Okay.
Guess. You want to guess which ones that were cut?
I can't.
You can't guess, like, or you just that, can't even.
That's going to get me so angry, because that's like going into what I was saying earlier and what you were saying earlier, that each song, like this, this was, I don't want to know anymore. I'm so pissed off right now.
No, it's like, what is this? You add 50 minutes of screen time, but you cut two songs.
Did they add more songs?
I want us. Well, that's why Lin-Manuel's involved, right? I think they added in like one or two new songs, but they cut some old ones out. I want to say I know of at least two that were cut. There's a third one that could the one that I think would be an easy one.
I'm thinking of like the short one, so like Vanessa's song.
No, I don't think they would cut that one out. I would think the Fathoms Below, which opens the movie, because that's one of the shorter ones.
I feel like we heard it, didn't we?
I think we did. I know the two songs that were cut. Oh, I don't know if you want to know.
Okay, let me explain why I'm angry. I feel like you know. But
yeah, well, I know. I'm angry at all of this. Okay. What do you mean? You're just angry now.
What Alexis was saying earlier with Howard Ashman and how he was so detail-oriented with this movie. This movie was the blueprint for adding songs to move along the story. Each song was made as the story went on. That was the first time they had done that. At least in a Disney movie. And that is what brought back the company. How this movie was made. Like, it was intentional. Why are you... I just don't understand. Why are you cutting... Why are you trying to make it exactly the same, but then cut out, like, the most important parts of this movie that made it like as big as it is? Like, that's...
You're saying what Ashman was saying. Every song is the most important part of the story. Yes. Like, yeah, no one's thinking that Under the Sea or Part of Your World were cut out. Obviously not. They're really popular songs in the, you know, pantheon of Disney classics. But like, hey, no song in the film is wasted. You know, everything is in there for a point. And to think that the people, again, that's why Alexis, that's why it's like, what, how much more, like, evidence do you need to know that, like, maybe Marsha wasn't the right person to direct it if he's making all these kind of, like, really ludicrous decisions?
Oh my God, that makes me even more angry because, well, sorry.
No, yeah.
It's not, I don't think it has anything to do with what you were saying. But somebody wrote, I hope they do like some type of tribute to Howard Ashman in the movie or at the end. You know the how tribute you know how you could do that?
Not make this movie? Literally, not make this movie. That's how you honor the man.
Not cut his work?
Yeah. Stay the fuck away from... Ooh.
Yeah, ooh, yeah.
You yeah. bring that up now, and my blood is boiling now, because now you remind me of Aladdin 2019, where that happened once before in the original film, Proud of Your Boy was cut out. And then there was a great... opportunity to maybe change the story a little bit and have that song in it in the new adaptation. If you're hearing silence right now, it's because Alexis and I are literally too angry to speak. We're both just here looking at each other and we're just like... I'm pissed off.
Yeah. And you know who said that too? Like a big... Who? One of the big Disney influencers. Please. Oh my God.
You know, I'm sorry to say, but it really does come across these days like, what is that but a job description at this point? Like, I mean, if you're a Disney influencer, aren't you practically expected to say nice things about Disney?
True.
Like, I mean, are you really going to say bad things to people who could, like, disinvite you to the next press screening? That's that, or like give you, you know, free stuff or invite you into the park or some kind of an event. I mean, that's unfortunately the kind of society that we live in. So that's why, you know, their kind of like opinions on certain things like this can't, you know, necessarily be all that trusted for accuracy's sake anyway. But, yeah, do you want to know the songs or I think you're good enough? You're pissed off enough to just not. You know, I mean, you know which ones already are not going to be there. Did you like?
Wait, by which the way, ones?
I thought you weren't. Okay, so from what I know of, it was Daughters of Triton, and Les Poissons.
That one did not cross my mind. I assume that they're gonna do a different song with the sisters, whatever.
Or maybe not at all.
I think they are because I feel like they've been promoting the sisters a lot.
They have?
Yeah. At least on my end, I've seen it a lot. So, okay. Fine. But what the fuck?
Les Poissons?
Why? I would honestly be
I mean, like, how do you cut that out?
I wouldn't have been surprised if it would have been Fathoms Below.
Right. That's an easy one to cut, right? I would not have liked it, mm-hmm. but of all the ones, that's like a gimme in a way, but Le Poisson? Oh wow.
God. Remember we had a whole conversation about that song?
We did, didn't we? Yeah. We had a whole ass conversation about that song and how important it was. And apparently, none of the people who were hired to do a remake of this film thought it was the least bit important. Again, they do this while adding a whole hour more of story.
And I swear, if they cut it to add a different one in its place.
Insulting.
It really is.
Insulting. Also, I want to say, yeah, Howard Ashman and Lin-Manuel collaborated.
Howard Ashman?
Did I say Howard Ashman? I apologize, Howard Ashman. Please don't come and haunt me at night. I cannot believe I associated your name with this fucking project. I meant to say Alan Menken and Lin-Manuel Miranda collaborated on it. I have to be honest with you. I have been rather disappointed, I think maybe is the nicest thing I can say. With Alan Menken's recent work, I felt like all of the songs that were written in Disenchanted were just simply atrocious.
I might be mistaken, but he doesn't write the song.
He doesn't write the lyrics or just the composition?
I think he only does the composition.
Okay, so
let me look it up, because
I thought he was also a lyricist, too.
I know they collaborated again, a lot, but
he
usually has a partner to do the lyrics okay, most of the time.
Right. That's how it usually is. That's what Ashman and Menken, the original Menken and Ashman duo was that Ashman did the lyrics and Menken did the compositions. That's the actual score part of it. But I do want to say that weren't there songs that Alan Menken wrote himself just completely on his own? With lyrics, too.
I mean, it might have been. Let me confirm. I'm sure, you know, he probably did.
I want to say the last thing that I know that he worked on that I thought was great was Tangled, right? The music from Tangled?
Mm, Yeah, he did the score.
Oh, okay. See, it's hard to remember this stuff, and you can never remember in the right times for it. But as Alexis is looking up this information, I just wanted to convey to people out there that are listening. Maybe if you get a kick out of hearing us, if you're entertained with us being enraged, you know, just stay tuned for our show. Maybe you might continue to hear some of these thoughts, but it's like, it also, you know what makes it even more annoying? There's a Kyle Lira out there somewhere that's enjoying this because, as he puts it, I had to go through this when Lion King came out in 2019. Now it's your guys' turn.
I already went through it twice. Excuse me.
With what, Maleficent and Alice in Wonderland?
Three times. Alice in Wonderland, two. Two times.
Did you wait a minute, you saw that?
Yes.
Who saw Alice through the Looking Glass?
I saw it at home. I didn't see it.
Oh my, you know who did see it in theaters?
Did you know Alan Menken? Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Did you know Alan Menken did the score for a Sausage Party?
That's another film I didn't even know. It's another film that I forgot even existed. I did not know he did the score for Sausage Party.
He did the music for Sonic the Hedgehog.
It's Thursday, people. It's the end of the week. What do you think is going to happen? Let's fuck up some words.
And Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Oh, yeah, there's that one.
Yeah, I guess Tangled. Maybe Newsies. Newsies is really good.
I will say nothing, no fuck up has ever been funnier than Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad. Sonage.
A la Peter Son. Remember Ulani? Oh my god, I remember that. But she's breaking down.
Why did you do that?
It just popped into my mind. Ulani. That's how Kyle enunciated Alani, the Hawaiian resort that belongs to Disney. It was on the Fantasy Fair podcast, to be fair. Again, one that that's a podcast that no longer exists. But when we did the podcast and everything, he said it was like Ulani. And we were like, what?
I think we both looked at each other like... That was so funny.
Yeah, it was... But then what's not going to be funny is this movie.
No.
At least not in the ways that that would be considered any, you know, something decent. I do want to say, before we get off the thing of Disney, there's a couple of things that we should talk about here that involving them. First of all, the only positive thing I can say, well, that's not true. There are two positive things I could say about Bob Iger's return to the company. One, the most positive thing I can say is I'm very happy that he is not backing down. And he seems really into his feud with Ron DeSantis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Ron DeSantis is an evil entity that needs to be fucked with. And I say that as somebody who doesn't want to see democracy go away, because Ron DeSantis, I mean, he's a piece of shit asshole politician that cares about, you know, nothing but himself and, you know, accumulating power for himself and his allies and his corporate donors, sure. But his tendencies as an executive officer are very fascist in nature. Punishing entities, corporations, and individuals for being who they are or expressing their First Amendment rights is fascist. This whole ordeal with Reedy Creek, or formerly known as Reedy Creek Special District, and what has ensued all happened because, you know, Bob you know, bitch-ass Chapek was pressured by his employees, homosexual and heterosexual alike, to say that it is rather bad that Florida would pass a bill that would prohibit LGBTQ individuals from expressing openly and proudly what their identity is, you know, specifically in schools. And, you know, Bob Chapek didn't really want to put up the fight, but he was kind of made into doing it, and then he just bumbled his way into doing it. And then, of course, he was replaced, again, assassinated in the middle of an Elton John concert, never heard from him again. Bob Iger came back, and the difference is just like, they've already filed like two separate lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Two separate lawsuits into him.
And they're pretty big.
They're big lawsuits, and they got a great chance of winning, yeah, too, because it is, I mean, what Ron DeSantis did to them was retaliation, was punishment. And I have to keep saying this to a lot of you people out there who are listening who may fall victim to a lot of the right-wing machine that just like, you know, convinces you into thinking that, you know, women are bad, or, you know, Disney is bad because they cast women of color. And you people, think to yourselves for a second here. You rage against like the woke Disney or the woke mob or whatever, but it's like, do you not see how the people who you think are on your side, they're gangsters and mobs themselves? Like think about this. Like, the people who whine and moan about cancel culture are the ones who actually engage in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, related to James Gunn would not be where he is right now, which is the head of DC Studios, which, at, you know, with him having gotten the chance to direct a Suicide Squad film, if it wasn't for a right-winger, Mike Cernovich, literally trying to cancel culture him,
mm-hmm,
he was the one that unearthed those tweets to get Gunn fired. Not because he thought that they were insensitive or that, you know, he had a problem with them. He hoped that it would get him fired because James Gunn said a bad thing about Donald Trump. By the way, Donald Trump, just this week, was found guilty by a civil court of sexual assault.
Unsurprisingly,
of course. I mean, we knew for years nobody cared, but it's like, it's a civil court found Donald Trump guilty of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Or sexual battery, whatever you want to call it. But like, James Gunn did nothing wrong. But he was fired, and then we all know the situation that he ended up being where he is now. He's obviously grown so much more as a person and as an artist, and you know what? It worked out in the end. But it was awful that Disney just dumped him like that, and no one should ever forget how bad that was, how badly they treated him. But again, I bring this up because, like, that's all these right-wingers are. They're just hypocrites. They don't care about cancel culture. They just don't, they don't like that their side is losing power.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like that their side is not popular with the new generation because, I mean, I'm sorry, you guys are just so, like, hateful and hurtful and stupid and dumb and just, like, so one-minded, like, hive-minded at that. Like, this whole thing about, what the governor of Florida did was just say, you know, Disney, I'm sorry, but like, you have no right to say what you think. So we're going to now retaliate against you and take over you. Now you have all these lawsuits. So when it comes to Bob Iger, I'm happy he's not backing down, and I'm happy he is actually taking a little bit of joy in this confrontation because you know what? Somebody needs to stick it to Ron DeSantis. And you know what?
You don't mess with the mouse.
You don't mess with the mouse, true. And even though I do want to add in this asterisk, because the 2024 presidential election is most easily going to be the most depressing one, only because it will most likely be a Republican winning. And it's not going to be good for any of us. But at the very least, I will take pleasure in Donald Trump kicking Ron DeSantis' ass in the debates. Because
I thought he couldn't run.
He's running. He declared a long time ago, didn't you?
But
you there?
No, honestly, I haven't. I thought he couldn't run because he was
impeached.
No.
Indicted?
Maybe.
I mean, he's a criminal, obviously, because of the insurrection thing?
Yes. Well, because he was, like, being sued and all that stuff.
No. No, he can still run. I guess the only way he can't run is, like, he's convicted of a felony. I mean, he is. No, but he's running.
Interesting.
And he's winning right now.
Of course he is.
No, he's winning. He's winning in the GOP primary, and there was a poll out. He beats Biden by 7 points in a head-to-head matchup. We learn nothing. We learn nothing. This is the guy that said, ingest some bleach into you. Maybe that'll kill the coronavirus. This is the guy that said, why don't we just throw a nuke at a hurricane to keep it from coming on to the... This is the same person that went on live television this week and literally made fun of the person he sexually assaulted. So it's like, yeah, that's not going to end well for any of us. But as far as Disney's concerned, thank you, Bob Iger, for doing that. Keep doing it. Florida needs to be put in its place. It's long been time for Florida to be put in their place for how they are and how they behave. Anyway, the other thing I will give Bob Iger a little bit of credit is pulling back on Disney Plus and reprioritizing where it needs to be, where, you know, him understanding that all the traditional, you know, verticals like the theatrical window and maybe even home media is worth keeping around instead of just like completely phasing it out. So there's that. But here's the problem, though. There's a lot of things people can say and credit Bob Iger for, you know, having done to Disney, and nothing he ever does from this point going forward can change that. But I do want to say, and I've been kind of beating this drum for weeks now. I don't know if you've heard this yet, Alexis, but the entire industry right now is just kind of all of a sudden surprised that none of their streamers are making any money, as if that was a surprise to begin with. But like, let it be remembered that none of these people, Paramount, Warner Brothers, Universal, none of these people would have jumped in the streaming thing if it wasn't for Bob Iger's decision to do Disney Plus. And Bob Iger made the decision after he realized he could not buy Netflix.
Yeah.
He went after Netflix first. I mean, we have long memories here on Red Spotlight, so we can actually remember this stuff for you guys. But he tried buying Netflix. They said, fuck you. And Bob Iger was like, then we'll make our own Netflix, which they did. And you know what? It seemed, at least for those first few years, that might have been a really right call because they had a lot of subscribers. The problem is, it's not profitable. They're not making any real money off of it. And if Disney isn't making any real money off of it, nobody else is making any real money off of it. So now this year, it feels like, was this a fad? Is it going to stick around the way that it, and then now, it's like, here, after Zaslav at Warner Brothers Discovery says that he's going to put all the HGTV stuff and TLC stuff into HBO, and then make a new streamer called Max. Here comes Disney saying, yeah, we're going to offer a new service. We're going to put in Disney and Hulu and sports, ESPN, into one streaming service. But at the same time, we're still going to give you guys the option to do just, we're still going to have ESPN Plus, Disney Plus, and Hulu, but we're also going to have a fourth app that's all three combined in one. We're still going to have a bundle, but we're still going to have the, but also, it's like, that's one thing. The other thing is, we're now going to basically eliminate all of the output that we have. That's not Star Wars or Marvel. We're going to pull back on that. And even then, they're already pulling back on the amount of money they spent on Marvel and Star Wars on Disney Plus. And it's not just Disney. It's all the streamers. They're like, you know what? They're literally, they hit the pause button and they're like, they're not spending anymore on original programming on streaming services, which is kind of that was the big thing, the big allure of them at first anyway. Mm-hmm. That was the appeal to get people to subscribe, was like, hey, here's a flavor of what we can offer, But now if you're pulling back on that, I mean, to me, I don't know how you take this, Alexis, but it kind of comes across like an admission of defeat here. That you're not spending on these anymore.
Yeah. I think that they need to stop making it complicated. Just make one app. Keep it on Disney Plus. Do everything that you have on there. Stop being stupid and allow for more adult content to be on there. Mm-hmm. And continue what you're doing with Hulu and just doing it on Disney Plus. And yes, take a pause on the stuff that you were doing on Disney Plus because you're just spending.
Yeah, you're not making any money. It's like, but then that's what we were saying for years about when COVID was happening. They're putting movies on there. It was even worse off with movies, and it damaged their brand in a number of areas. But it's like, hey, wait a minute here. You're not making any money by putting things on streaming. Subscriber growth is not enough to keep up to make anything profitable. I want to play a clip here from your favorite person, Alexis, that I thought summarized this. You give me that look, like, really going to put this bitch in here? But it's like she
didn't she just say, I thought Little Mermaid was great.
Yes. But she also said Guardians 3 was great. And you know what? She was right there.
Oh, putting them at the same level.
Yeah, sure. Here's the
selling
thing.
Point, because you can already get the bundle. The real selling point is that it'll all be in the same app. You know, I just think, is that going to make Disney Plus look like garbage when you're in the app? You know, I feel like these apps are looking worse. You know, I think Max is going to look worse. Happy 2 months anniversary, Jake. You know, like, I like Disney Plus and I liked HBO Max for, like, their viewpoint. Like, when I launched Disney Plus or when I launch HBO Max, I very clearly feel like I'm entering a world. But when I go, for instance, like on Paramount Plus or Peacock, I'm like, I have no idea where I am, man. There's just so much content. It's like that iCarly meme where she opens the door and there's a big flash of light in her face. And you're like, where am I? So I think that by putting everything on the same app, I think it's going to just be really weird. You know, Josh loves movies. That's a good point. Are they doing this to combat Max? Is Max going to be like, oh, everything's on one app? And then Disney's like, oh, man, does that make us look bad? I think that's misguided. I think Max is making a mistake. We should get a lot of Max details next week as well. Because, you know, Warner Brothers has their upfront on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern.
No, I don't think that.
I don't necessarily feel like... it's not a problem, but it is a bit confusing from Disney's standpoint to have four apps.
It is. I feel like that's more insane to me than having everything in one place. Mm-hmm. And, like, it'll work because they have the things on top where everything's kind of divided into categories. It can still do the same thing.
The thing is, I don't think they can get rid of Hulu yet because Universal still has a stake. Mm-hmm. In it, and then Hulu has the live TV component. Let me see this.
But the reason also that they're probably putting all these things on one service, that's right, Dan, and we're going to talk about combating churn in just a moment, is because they're dialing back production. They're going to make less originals, but also they're going to remove content from the site. What? Oh my God, everybody just got upset with Warner Brothers Discovery for that, and here comes Disney.
I think a recent article listed a number. They gave a figure. It was like over 80 titles that David Zaslav removed from HBO Max. And that was purely a cost-cutting, you know, decision. They were like, we don't really feel these people should deserve any residual checks. So we're just going to destroy their livelihoods. We're going to take this off as a way to, like, you know, cut our costs.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The stuff that was taken off HBO Max, that was stuff that was only on HBO Max. I can't speak. Max? Like, original content?
Some of it was. Yeah, some of it was, so, and now it's nowhere to be found.
Wouldn't that be, like, a little difficult to do with Disney Plus? I mean, they haven't really, if you really think about it, they haven't done a lot of stuff.
No, they haven't, but, like, I guess, like, to me, it's the Pandora's box of it all, right? Like, Zaslav opened this box, and now it's, like, the doesn't really have to make sense, does it? They could just do what they want. And I think, did you watch that clip I sent over? The one that Peter was like, I could 100% see them doing this?
I saw his comment. I didn't see the video, though.
You didn't see the video? Because I'm going to play it because I think it's a possibility, okay? Just bear with me. I know you don't like her voice, but...
As someone already pointed out, bringing back the Disney Vault. Netflix is very successful by saying, hey, what's new to Netflix this month? Mm-hmm. What's leaving Netflix after this month? And we'll very often see very old films pop up into the top 10 on Netflix because people can finally watch them. And they're new. They're new to them. So, you know, when Disney Plus launched, it threw open the doors to the Disney Vault. You could watch Sleeping Beauty whenever you wanted to. And while that was fun at first, I think it got old eventually. And now you're like, oh man, how many times can I watch Sleeping Beauty? And, you know, of course, the Disney Vault was extremely successful in selling DVDs back in the day. So I think that what they're going to do is do this to combat churn. They're going to have the Disney Vault, and I think particularly their classics will only be available for a limited time. So they can advertise it. They can say, hey, do you really want to rewatch Zootopia? Even with current films. Do you want to rewatch Zootopia? Well, it finally came back. It's only going to be on Disney Plus for a month. You better watch it while you can. I don't know. I think that, you know, Disney Plus is being used as a babysitting service, as we know, and that's one of the main reasons it's so successful. In fact, Max touted during their presentation that they had a lot, they were developing their own babysitting service. And so I think that, you know, I think that it'll be, I mean, can people just watch Bluey all day? Maybe they can. And as some of you said, you know, the kids watch Bluey, the adults watch The Simpsons, and that's it. But I think that, you know, I guess it would have to see how they did it and for how long it would be available. And could they push DVD sales? Could they go back to physical media and digital purchases? If they're like, hey, look, you know, since Little Mermaid, the original Little Mermaid, let's say, and they played around with this with Avatar. Remember, they pulled Avatar for a while. Remember that? They pulled Avatar from Disney Plus. But maybe they could say, look, Zootopia, we'll go back to Zootopia. Zootopia is on Disney Plus for 6 months. Then we remove it, and it's not coming back to Disney Plus for years, at least 2 to 3 years. So why don't you go buy the digital version of it or a hard copy so that you can watch it whenever you want, forcing people to go back and buying collections, building collections. I think that's really going to make people upset. So let's see. You know, I think the genie might be out of the bottle. They might have opened Pandora's box. I don't really know if that's possible.
I feel like if the question is Disney above doing this shit? No.
So I think from like a business standpoint, it might be smart. But they sold this as,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're going to take that away. And then also, right? People are not going to pay attention to how long it's going to be there. Like, right, to an average viewer. Obviously, we know because we're, you know, paying attention. But, like, everybody else, they're going to be like, what the heck? Why am I paying for this then?
I mean, that's what she said, I think, right here. She said something like, that was kind of the point of Disney Plus, like right here.
The whole point of having Disney Plus was that it brought Disney into your home 24/7. But now it looks like maybe it won't. So I think this is very tricky. But you know what? They have to do it because they admitted they're not making any money. And so that has been a real problem for Disney. They're like, we got to do something because Disney Plus actually is not generating revenue. Especially because it's so expensive to make the original content.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a problem, right? But it's like, hey, we shouldn't forget, whose decision was this?
Mm-hmm.
It was Bob Iger.
Yeah, I don't think...
He pulled the whole industry into this, and now everybody is suffering because of that. This may be his worst instinct.
That
was to just to jump straight into the streaming pool and thinking it would be like the next big cash cow. And remember, like, this was even after he had left, but in the Chapek era, there were some people who thought, like, streaming was it now, it had arrived, that they were, like, phasing out the theatrical window. And now, you've seen other ways how they pulled back. Like, tomorrow, I think this week, this is May, what? We're in May 12th? May 11th, okay. May 11th, May 12th. A film very clearly, you know, is terrible and nobody watched, but I'm just throwing it out there to give an example. Quantumania drops on Disney Plus this week. Quantumania was released in theaters in February. That took a long time by recent standards because I want to say that most films took 30 to 45 days to be on Disney Plus. But now what they did was... they tested it first with James Cameron because James Cameron was not going to let his movie be on Disney Plus. you're going to make me that fucking money. And so what they did with Avatar: The Way of Water on digital only, and it blew up, and they made a lot of money on digital. And then like they realized all of a sudden, maybe we shouldn't put the movies on Disney Plus. After we had been saying that for how many years, So then it made them think, okay, let's test this Marvel movie and see how it goes. And it's like, yeah, well, duh. Fucking duh. There, I mean,
it's just so funny because it's so
obvious.
Obvious. Like, what are they trying to do?
Yeah. It's a mess, and I don't see how this, like, resolves itself, you know? I guess, like, to me, though, I think ultimately this streaming failure is a good... For me, I take it as a sigh of relief because it reminds all these people that were very, you know, outwardly trying to push theaters away... They're now reevaluating and like realizing you cannot get any better than movie theaters when it comes to your making profits, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just the way that it is. And I cannot believe it took them like 5 years to figure this shit out. So Lexis, I know we've already gone on a while. I do want to get your thoughts real quick though on this writer's strike. Did you by any chance get, have you been following it? What do you think?
A little bit, yeah.
What are your thoughts on this whole situation?
Good for them.
Mm-hmm. Good for her. Good for them.
There was this thing, okay, there was like two things that I saw on Twitter, that I was like, oh. Down, which kind of brings me to thinking into the things that are going on right now on television and movies and all that stuff. That the last time, I don't know if you were a fan of the show, I was a big fan of the show. But the last time that
a writer's strike happened,
Heroes was on,
that's what I heard, yeah.
And you could tell the effects of it by watching the first season and then watching the second season.
Well, I mean, at the moment, two shows that we love, House of the Dragon and Andor, they're filming right now. They claim they have finished scripts. But as the writer's strike entails, they're not allowed to do any kind of rewrites. And if they do, they'll have the actors do it or somebody who's not designated as a writer.
Interesting.
The only people who have shut down because of this are the Duffer Brothers in the last season of Stranger Things. They're the only ones that have said, you know what, we're not going to do this until this is over.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's not worth
it. Yeah.
It's obviously not worth it. Like, you're putting you're jeopardizing the quality of these shows. Yeah. Because writing is quality. There is no substitute for writing, for quality writing.
It's literally the backbone of anything in cinema, television, anything. Right.
I mean, I can think of the worst examples and the best examples of, like, how writing has made or broken a film completely. In terms of, like, Rian Johnson and James Gunn, they are some of my favorite writers because those films are amazing movies, mostly. Not most, but they're amazing in all their rights, but, like, it all starts with the writing and their ability to interweave everything perfectly in their films, all of theirs. I just watched Last Jedi recently again. What a movie. Oh, my God. It's amazing. And then think of J.J. Abrams and Jon Favreau. And think of just how, like, every part of the things that they touch just... Like, I talk about a film that was just broken beyond repair. That's The Rise of Skywalker.
J.J. Abrams is nowhere to be found.
And that one's a painful situation because, like, the actors are doing... They were doing the best they could. They were doing the best they could with that material they were given. But holy crap, was it... It was shattering. How bad that was. So... Yeah, like, I don't know what they think is going to happen if they let this go on. But, I mean, it's what I said in the last podcast is the writers, I don't think, are asking for anything unreasonable. The big distributors and corporations are always looking to cheat human beings. That's just the way that I look at it. I feel like there was something. Oh, yes. Yeah, so, what the writer's strike is going to affect one studio more than anybody else. The studio known for rewriting everything every day. Every day Marvel Studios exists, there is a rewrite happening on one of their projects. Blade right now, they were forced to just, like, put the whole thing on hold because they recently, it's funny, they hired a writer. They just recently hired a new writer to do the script over again. And the next day, the strike happened. So, and I want to say that Mahershala Ali is going to be 50 this year. He was 45 when they announced
the movie. Oh my God. That is... Just let it go, bro.
It ain't happening. This ain't happening. What's it called? So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see Marvel do how they cope with, you know, them not being able to do rewrites. Because that's all they do. That's all they fucking do is rewrites. So, that's going to be interesting. But I mentioned earlier that the stink that Quantumania left has very clearly affected, I want to say, all comic book movies. Because, wow, Shazam 2 was pitiful. That no one saw that film. No one gave a shit. And even in the best circumstances, it was going to be an uphill climb. But even there, it was like no one cared. But the idea, Alexis, that the third installment of the Guardians of the Galaxy, which I want to say synonymously and pop culture-wise, I want to say that we've gotten to the point where the Guardians are more popular than the Avengers, right? I mean, the Guardians got... They were the first ones to get an attraction in Disney. Mm-hmm. How is it that a Guardians movie, no less the finale, this is basically their end game, right? The Guardians. And they only opened to $110 million in the opening weekend? That was only five more than Quantumania?
Yeesh.
Marvel is flopping. That's flopping hard. That tells me that their recent track record so put off people, he didn't even give Guardians a benefit of the doubt. That suggests to me there were so many films.
I think that it also has to do with James Gunn. A lot of people aren't happy with him or don't want to be for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I think that is a big part of it as well, just because I have seen nonstop people talking bad about him. So, I don't know.
Why, though? For the dumb reasons that we keep saying? I don't understand. Like, even the Rotten Tomatoes... DC,
I don't know. People just don't seem to have faith in him, which is ridiculous when...
I mean, look at this movie.
His track record is one of the best, but, you know.
Okay. I'll say this. It is the opening weekend, and that's not measuring the quality of a movie. That's just measuring how much the audience has interest in Marvel. And the idea that it was that low suggests that general audience people are their interest in Marvel these days is not very well, if that's all it could do. That's what it tells me. Besides, the film got an A cinema score. That was one of the only A cinema scores Marvel has gotten in the last 3 or 4 years. One of the only A's they received. The word of mouth has been great on this movie, so it's not this that's the issue. But it's going to be interesting to see how the Marvels does in November.
Oof.
Because I don't know how you feel, but when that trailer plays in theaters, the audience does not care.
Mm-mm.
It does not play.
They need to just... I think like what is also part of it is just that it's too much. Like, it's too much to keep up with. They need to stop with everything connecting because...
It's hurting them?
Yeah.
It's crippling them.
It's so badly.
I mean, the idea that the Hulks are going to take over a Captain America movie. I know, it's upsetting. Well, you know what? Since we're already here, I want to talk about this. What were your honest thoughts of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3? And also... I think this goes without saying, but I think we're a pretty big fan of the Guardians films before, you know, going into this movie. And I think we all said that we were all very excited about seeing it. What honestly did you think of the film?
I was crying the whole movie.
So it wasn't just me?
No.
I couldn't believe how much I was crying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to cry, but holy crap.
I just thought at the end I would cry.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, but not like, not at the start.
Yeah. I think my favorite part about this movie is how much we get of James Gunn.
Yes.
The fact that he was like, this is like my story. Like, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, how he, how much he compared himself to Rocket. And then seeing the things that he's been through and the things that he's doing now. I love it.
I mean, that's ultimately why the Guardians films are superior to anything else Marvel does, right? Was because these films are they're special among the Marvel movies, where their director is allowed to imbue his essence and his DNA into the characters, into the story. There are actual themes, there are actual arcs, and every decision is in service of the theme and the story
Yes.
and the characters. It is not at all in service to whatever is happening in somebody else's movie or TV show. And by the way, that isn't to say that he's been left alone. Like, James Gunn has had to maneuver around pretty fucking big decisions that were, if we're being honest with ourselves, if he had had the ability, he would have refused. I mean, to me, one of the things that had me like scratching my head about like, what do you even do? Was the fact that you jump from Guardians 2 and that this whole saga happened in between Guardians 2 and Guardians 3. Peter's saying to, he was saying that one of his biggest problems with Guardians 3 was that you couldn't really enjoy it as much if you just jumped to it from 2, that you really had to know what happened in Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, not just because of what happens and goes down there, but for like a lot of the characters go through a lot of growth. It's not just that the characters disappear, but like Gamora fucking dies. That was the big one for me. It's like that Gamora that we've known died.
Yeah.
And then we have a new Gamora who has no idea who these people are. And now she, this new Gamora, is with the Guardians here. And it's like, well, at the end of Guardians 2, that was the very beginning
and you know what?
Of like
that was,
them as a
that
couple.
Was, that is a big issue because I came across somebody that was confused by that. And she's seen the whole movies, and she's like, wait, didn't she die? Why is she there? She's not supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. So that is a big issue.
Yeah.
And this is
they do
this
explain
is like,
it, like
general audience viewing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Although the movie, I think, they do make it clear this is not the same Gamora. But still, you have to like, the thing is, everybody saw Gamora die.
Yes.
This is somebody else.
Yes. But even then, it's not somebody else. It's the same person. It's just there's a whole explanation to us, you know, what's going on with her.
Yeah, and all that because of something else. So it's like, this is something that he had to maneuver around. And like the thing is, I have to say this. I don't know how you could have handled it better than how he did it. Because he was able to actually bring out some nuance and emotion with, you know, Gamora not Gamora here, right? Like, because ultimately it's like the relationship that she and Star-Lord, Peter had, right? And because ultimately that's where he is at. He's depressed because she's gone. And she's, I mean, to him, she's gone. And here he is having to work with her again.
This is like what should have happened in the last Star Wars movie with Kylo Ren.
Which is?
Where you get something from a previous situation.
Ah. Okay.
And continue the story.
Mm-hmm.
But not go back.
Yeah. Not go back and everything. No, but I really did enjoy even this Gamora. I love how there is such a difference from where we meet up with her to where we end up with her. And like you could just tell, even though she's not saying it, you can see that in her face. Her whole life has been changed just by this movie. And even at the very end, like that last, like, even how it was framed with them, like, looking at different directions and her saying to him, I bet we were fun. And then him, like, you wouldn't believe. And again, that's what I said to Peter. I mean, David was like, I don't know what it is about Chris Pratt when he works with other people that he just doesn't have the same kind of charisma. But here it's like, you felt that. That was, he was unbelievable in this movie. Like, honestly, he was great. And that was a pretty hard one, I think, for him to wrap around to. Also, what Peter said was one of the things that you really need to watch Endgame particularly for was, well, the whole thing with Nebula and Rocket. They were the only ones that were left, you know? And like,
I don't think so. I don't think that you necessarily had to watch it. Because I feel like you could see from the last movie to this movie, even if you don't watch the in-between, that she had the same effect that Gamora had in this movie. So I don't necessarily think that with her and her relationship with Rocket is like that. And they do, they like do kind of imply that like Nebula took over Gamora's place and being the mom of the group, you know. So I don't necessarily think that that one is as much of a big deal as it is with Gamora.
Well, it's like,
and plus, like, I mean, granted, like Rocket was asleep the whole time, or dying the whole time, but like, you could tell that she really cares about all of them. Like, if it would have been anybody else, like, she would, I feel like she would have reacted the same way. You know what I mean?
The one, even in that moment where she breaks down, when she hears his voice, it's like, to me, it's like, well, she's all, he is all she had for those 5 years. I mean, that's not a complaint for me. I want to be clear. It's like, it doesn't matter to me. Oh, I have to watch Infinity War and Endgame.
But I'm saying, like, as a complaint for maybe the general audience, I don't think.
No,
I don't think it's a big deal.
I think you get it. You know, just a lot of the other little things in here. I loved all the things they did with Drax and Mantis.
Oh my god, I thought Drax was the funniest. Oh my god, I was laughing so hard.
Bautista's delivery is like perfect. Perfect. Like everything he was doing. It's like, Mantis, you asshole. Was it when the spacesuits were like thrown out there?
And you know what? Like him, like his character was kind of, at least to me, was kind of getting old. But like,
he brought it back.
Oh my god.
He brought you back. But then also too, his got emotional at the end as well, because you see him really spark with the children. And then when Nebula tells him, like, you were born to be a dad.
Please.
You weren't born to be a destroyer. Or you weren't meant to be a destroyer. You were born to be a dad. God. Perfect. And also Mantis in this movie.
Mantis. I wish that they would have. I feel like she did get a lot of screen time. But I feel like I wanted more. Because they made her so interesting in this movie.
And also a badass, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she was, like, in battle. She was like, whoa. Have you seen it again? Are you planning on seeing it again?
I'm not sure. probably not, but we'll see.
Okay.
They're showing Wizard of Oz next week, so.
Priorities, right? Priorities. Were there any things you didn't like of the film? Oh, how did you handle the animal abuse stuff? Because a lot of people are talking about that. I know. I thought I it was a
that,
bit like
the stupidest thing that people are saying is that they didn't understand the ending with Groot.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean?
You want to explain it to them?
You're a guardian now. There, that's it. Yeah. That's literally it. Anyways.
The reason you can understand him or you heard him you're say, I love family. You guys, is like, now you're part of the family. Yeah. I mean, that just tells you, Alexis, that there are a lot of people that just, they can't read a film to save their life.
I mean, I feel like the animal abuse was kind of expected, if you didn't know.
I think a lot of people were, like, being overdramatic with that situation. It was like, oh, if you're an animal lover, you might not want to go see this movie. It's like, what the fuck?
Or you should, to get more pumped up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is a pro-PETA movie, if anything
ever was. Oh, the fact that people are like, this movie isn't political.
Oh my god. Doesn't that just, like, say it all?
Insane. Again. Insane.
This movie isn't political. I mean, first of all, it just says that they don't know how to read a movie. They can't read into anything more than what's on the surface level, number one. And number two, this basically just completely exposes all these, like, go woke bros as, like, okay, so you've exposed yourself as not having the ability to ascertain whether or not something is political, and yet you still choose to bitch about POCs. Maybe your problem is with POCs. Maybe that was your issue all along. Maybe you just can't handle stories that are with, like, women or POCs. People of color.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, I mean, it was obvious from day one that's what it was. But you basically just kind of accidentally told in yourself there. It's like, yeah. Okay. So fucking stupid. Like, the fuck? I mean, the villain in this movie, the High Evolutionary, he's able to, like...
Evolution is...
Well, yeah, that's the thing. But, like, he's able to fund these societies, which he then commits genocide to repeatedly. But he's able to do that through a connection in his corporation. Corporation that is allowed to exist, you know, outside galactic law. Gee, I wonder where that rings a bell. Where, like, you know, corporations can do whatever they want outside the bounds of law and order. Hmm. Again, the same people who parrot law and order are like, it's always, you know, a certain kind of person that needs to be handcuffed or have a knee or neck, you know, that's law and order. Because otherwise they'd burn down a police building. How dare they? But then when the corporations go, I don't know, dump fucking sludge and pollution into the rivers, they're like, that's America. How do they not see the politics in this movie? Damn it. Like, how do you enjoy this if you don't even know what's exactly going on?
Like, it's such a big part of it that I don't understand how they don't see it. Anyways, a part that I didn't like or thought it was a little bit strange was when he gets or starts to get frozen. I don't know. At the end.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I think it was just done for dramatic effect. Just to, like, put it out a little bit longer to see whether or not that's you what, buy that's into what him dying. I think
people thought of when Leia was using the Force. Uh-huh. But they swear like it was that.
To be fair, though, Alexis, I think, like, all of the issues that those groups brought up against The Last Jedi, they're just full of shit. There always were, but, like, man, do they not hold water at all? Oh, Lara Jen had purple hair. That offended them. I don't know what to say about any of that. You might disagree, but I think they handled Adam Warlock pretty well here. I thought Will Poulter was hilarious.
Yeah, I thought he was good. Honestly, I don't have a lot of complaints. That one's probably my only issue.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I thought that looked strange.
I don't know. I think to me it's like this... I so thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I was so impressed with Gunn's ability. Gunn's direction especially is like how he's able to just like level up from movie to movie. And it gave me a satisfying conclusion to these characters. I think it cements all these films as all these Guardians movies as like one of the best trilogies out there. I feel like the film is so good. I think it's in contention for one of the best Marvel movies pretty easily. And I think also the film is in contention to be one of the best third installments of a trilogy. Because usually, you know, rarely is part three one of the better installments of any trilogy, you know? But this is pretty fucking great. And it just gets me excited for Superman.
Oh my God, don't get me started with Superman. I'm obsessed right now.
Mm-hmm. And then James Gunn's gonna land right in there.
I'm so excited. Mm. I'm so scared.
But excited.
But excited.
But yeah. I like how a lot of people took to Twitter and it's like, yeah, this is basically the end of the MCU. I'm done. Later.
I mean, I don't blame them. Unless Eternals comes back.
Yes, exactly. That's the only exception. I wanted to ask you that, but seriously, like, think about Quantumania. How that was the movie before this. Like, think about the jump in quality from Quantumania to Guardians 3.
That makes me so sad, because Ant-Man was one of my favorites. Not, like, in the beginning. Not, like, pre-movie.
Uh-huh.
They fumbled it.
Yeah, I think to me, Quantumania is the embodiment of what Marvel has become, and Guardians 3 is the embodiment of what they can't be. What they won't allow themselves
mm-hmm.
to be.
Mm-hmm.
They could do this. Yeah. They could do this every time, but they refuse to do it. They refuse to do it because they don't want to hire people that have the talent that Gunn has.
Yep.
They don't want to allow a director to be a fucking director. Among a whole other, you know, host of problems, right? But that's the gist of it, really.
Yep. Agreed.
So, I'm pretty good to go. Got a lot of movies coming up, guys, so stay tuned here.
What's next?
Thank you. Like, what I think The Little Mermaid is? I'm not going to watch it. So far, I'm not going to watch it, but I think that's the next one that's coming up. Yeah.
Well.
But after that is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So,
it's getting closer.
And you know what I saw, though? The tracking. What is going on? Like, so the tracking for this movie is only at like $80, $90 million opening weekend.
How much was the first one?
Lower. So wow. It is higher, but it was much lower. But it is an animated movie. But like, I don't know. One would hope that this would open on the level of like an Incredibles, because like the first movie is legendary.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I don't know.
But we'll see.
But, I mean, it's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So
we'll see how that all goes. Anyway, thank you for being here, Alexis. Thank you all for listening. As a reminder, you can catch our podcast every single Sunday. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, stay under our spotlight for more content and more. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.